Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi friends, it's your captain here, Alex. I look after social media marketing and events at Look Mum No Hands. I'm usually joined by my stoker, Jenny, the director of the London Bike Kitchen, but she's busy fixing bikes. So please enjoy this live panel recording of our transcontinental debrief held at Look Mum No Hands on Wednesday, the 19th of September. Please enjoy.
Okay, we're going to get started now. I'm Laura, and this is the Transcontinental Debrief for the race that happened this year, 2018. I'm just going to let everybody introduce themselves really quickly before we get started.
Hi, I'm V. I did the race last year. Haven't ridden my bike again since, really. But it's really nice to come back here and, I guess, remember how amazing cycling is.
Hi, I'm Meg. I did the race this year. I haven't really ridden my bike since either, possibly because I broke it on the way home. But yeah, it's nice to be here.
Hi, I'm Rory. I'm one of the organisers for the Transcontinental Race, and I took part in this in 2016.
I'm Will. I'm another competitor from last year, and I have ridden my bike quite a lot since.
Hi, I'm Keith. I work here, coincidentally, and I rode this year, so...
So we're just going to start with Rory. If you could just tell us a little bit about this year's race, where the checkpoints were, sort of average distance that riders covered, and just sort of a little, I'm sure most people know what Transcontinental is who are here, but just sort of a little overview of the race.
So for people who don't know, the Transcontinental is the definitive self-supported 4,000 kilometer race across Europe. It's been going for 6 years and started off when our founder, Mike Hall, wanted to put something on for people to experience what he did when he cycled around the world. So set off in London and finished in Istanbul, and that was the first race. There was a couple of checkpoints. Since then, we've had the same kind of setup about it being really self-supported, it being an undefined route, and having some really incredible checkpoints for people to go and experience and enjoy. And the progression across Europe is really important. The kind of degradation of man across Europe towards the Balkans is always good, man and woman. So this year we set off in Gerensbergen, and we had four checkpoints leading us to the finish in Greece in Meteora. The first checkpoint was in Austria, Blunderhaus Pass. I'm sure someone can pronounce it better than me. Then it was in Slovenia, the Magart, which looked incredible, and I think everyone had a really good time there this year, although it was really, really tough. Then we, for the first time in our history, we ventured over to Poland, and then came back, and again, for the first time in our history, we were in Bosnia, and had an incredible climb up to a ski pass that was all gravel, and apparently everyone loved it, and no one swore on the way up. I mean, the views are amazing, but it was fucking horrible. And then finished in Meteora. The total distance, I think, from looking at everyone's rides, was around about 3850. I'm sure someone will correct me if I was wrong. And people varied. So some people did, if you look at James, he did incredible mileage every day. And then if you look at Neil at the other end of the spectrum, I think his average was about 100 kilometers a day. So... we have a breadth of people that come in and undertake the race, and they do it for very different reasons. But I think everyone will agree it's quite a life-defining adventure.
So I think you touched on something in that, which is probably a good place for us to start, and that's that people come into these races for all kinds of different reasons. It usually is sort of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity or adventure, but I think the things that lead people to decide that they want to take on something as crazy as this are quite interesting. So I guess that's my first question to everyone. Why did you decide you wanted to take part?
So I decided to take part mainly because I'm quite scared of doing things on my own. So I thought I wanted to set myself a challenge to ride across Europe. I've kind of wanted to do it for a while, but never found anyone to do it with. And then I think it was probably Emily Chappell a few years ago who kind of drew my kind of eyes to bikepacking. I was lucky enough to meet some fantastic people, I think a couple of years ago doing the Torino Nice Rally. So I did that, and the guys taught me how to bike pack. I turned up for a gravel ride on a road bike. I bought all the biggest Apadura kit, thinking I needed to pack loads of stuff in there. Couldn't fit anything in. So basically, it was so big, it was rubbing on my whole bike. So the guy, I work in the cycling industry, so I'm really lucky to be kind of around everyone. So I was at a Eurobike, and the guys quickly sorted me out. They put thick tires on my bike and helped me and get smaller bike packs. So I think I learned the ropes from James Olsen from Evans, who's absolutely fantastic. And from there, it kind of just intrigued me. I love to like travel. I love to be adventurous, but I was scared. So I thought you might as well just chuck yourself in the deep end and just have a go. And I think I just did it as the best thing I've ever done. I think you just learn. Like I quite like chucking myself in the deep end. So I just learn on the way. I think everyone else was like, they knew where they were going. They didn't get lost. I just kept getting lost. My bike kept breaking. I think after a while, I followed James Hayden's route, I think, because I was at checkpoint 2 whilst he had finished. So I thought, fuck this, and just downloaded a Strava routes and followed him to the end. So like for me, it was such an amazing experience, and it's something I do over time and time again. So I think I did it because I was scared. I just wanted to like break those boundaries.
For me, it started, I think it was like an autumn time, and I was feeling a bit meh coming home from work. I thought, what can I do to make things interesting? So then I entered the Transatlantic Way one night, and then I thought a couple of months passed, and I thought that wouldn't be enough, like 2,000 kilometres around Ireland, so why don't I try and enter the Transcontinental in the same year? And then maybe I won't get in. I forgot that I yes. So I got in, and then I was like, well, why don't I just do both and see what I can do? And just keep cycling. So I'd never been part of a cycling club. I'd never really done anything like that. But I just knew that I was quite bloody minded and could probably just keep going. If there was a beer at the end of each day, that would probably motivate me. And I thought, what's the worst that can happen? If my bike breaks, I'll get to have a cycle tour in Europe. Yeah. So, yeah, just had a go.
So my story started a little bit. I'm going to blame V because came in a little bit for the bike setup, which it's not my fault. It kept breaking, by the way. And then I kind of sort of realized that, you know, it wasn't, you didn't have to be sort of at the top of the cycling world. It's one of those things I didn't think you could actually enter as just a normal cyclist. And then I put the application in as a bet with one of the other mechanics, Dave here, neither of us thought we would get in. And I was sat in the pub on a Sunday with my girlfriend, probably the heaviest I've been in my life. Hadn't been riding for ages, and then opened an email, cancelled Sunday lunch, made that my last Guinness for 4 months, and then proceeded to panic train from there on in. Again, because I work in the cycle trade, I was quite lucky to be able to sort of call on lots of people's advice and help. You know, I've had people that finished way at the back and people that finished way at the front telling me how their experiences went, and they're still similar experiences in that, you know, you don't have to be the winner of Transcon to have it be a really amazing experience. So yeah, it's kind of come back now back in normal life, but it's definitely changed a lot of how I look at how I cycle in general.
So I think for me, it was kind of a little bit of going, how do people do that? It's sort of, you know, sit on their bikes every day, that long, that far, day in, day out. And I think, I've been following it since it started, but each year it just drew me in a little bit more as an event. You start watching the dots, you start kind of meeting friends of friends, people who've done it or know somebody who's done it, and you're just like, can I? And then you find yourself on like a January evening filling in the application form going, well, I suppose the only way to find out is to enter, but I probably won't get in, will I? And then you get the email and you're in and you go like, oh, better start like training and stuff. And yeah, it's just like, see if you can, because it feels like absolutely monumentally ridiculous. But I reckon most like sort of reasonably serious cyclists probably can do it if you just focus on it. But the only way to find out is to do it. So you enter and then you find yourself in Gerardsbergen with 250 other lunatics and trying to see if you can get to Greece.
Can I just say, I don't think you need to be serious.
Yeah, I disagree with that too. You just need to be, yeah, I think, like, I honestly think that with most of these endurance races, it's sort of like, I don't know, 70% mental, like 80% mental, and the rest is your fitness. Like, you need to have some fitness, but, like, you know, maybe not drink Guinness every day, but, you know, I'm sure that helps too, calories, right? So how many people in the room are dot watchers? So for those who don't know, just because it was brought up, so when you're tracking these races, you have a GPS spot tracker, and that allows people to follow you so you can see where everybody is in real time, and it gets really, really addictive. And it's pretty accurate to the point that, like, when I've done races, I've had my sister call me and be like, why are you sitting in McDonald's? You don't even eat meat. And I'm like, So, I mean, it's a great way to follow the races, and it's always interesting when you're doing these events because you'll see people in places and you're like, why on earth are they sitting there? Like, there's nothing around. It makes no sense. But you don't know the stories and the reasons why they're there. And it's kind of when we have these talks that it's really interesting to find out what unusual places people were sleeping in, what unusual places and encounters they had. So on that, what's the weirdest place you slept?
A tractor shop. It was crossing a border. It was a really straight road, and it was full of, what do they call them? The petrol stations? The petrol stations with hotel rooms. I think they do other business too. So I wasn't willing to stay there, and it was full of houses, full of petrol stations, full of dogs, and the only place I could find to stay was around the back of a tractor shop. It was comfortable. I woke up in the middle of the night, and there was a man walking past me. We looked at each other, and I went back to sleep.
I think my sleeping place was pretty normal, actually, just like lots of bushes. I found actually with the dot watching was so lovely to have such support, but also my mother. My mother just would get so terrified every single day that she would message me frantically, even though she could see my dot was moving, to say, are you okay? Are you okay? So actually after a while, and when I traveled into Eastern Europe, it got worse and worse, actually, that I ended up staying in a hotel every night just to shut her up, and which often was a lot further than I wanted to ride, or I'd run out of food, but she'd just keep messaging until I found that hotel room. Lots of bushes. And even when I lied, she'd be like, I can see that you're by a train line. You're not in a hotel. So I think the dot watching was amazing, but it's really interesting if you talk to people that the your family as well kind of are invested in the race. And I think it's, you enter it for quite selfish reasons because I want to do this, I want to ride across Europe. But I think when you go to the race, you realize actually that your parents, your family, your friends are all kind of coming along with you. So that I think probably halfway through the race, I think my focus changed and I started to consider like my mum, my dad, etc., to where I was staying.
My mom's really bad for that too. She's always like, why would you stop there if like 50 miles down the road there's a hotel? And I'm like, because it's 50 miles.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that people that are watching your dots and they'll let you kind of, you'll get these ideas and people are like, oh, you know, it's 300K to somewhere, but that's as the crow flies. So people are always looking at a straight line to a next stop, whereas obviously, you're never riding in a dead straight line. Well, most of the time. So I plan to sort of sleep out a lot, before I started and then realize that's not always an option. You know, sometimes you have to stay in hotels. I didn't go with, so a lot of people take a choice of how they charge their equipment. They either use a dynamo to charge whilst they're riding or you kind of, go without that, and then you're just charging all of your equipment and taking battery packs, which is really time consuming and obviously needs electricity. So sleeping in the field is not always a good option. But having said that, I think the weirdest place I slept was Checkpoint 2. It was up a beautiful climb, came back down there before it was dark in a little bit of a panic, got to an amazing hotel and realized I couldn't actually bother to book myself in the hotel. So I actually slept in front of the hotel on a patch of grass within spitting distance of the reception. You know, it seemed ridiculous, but at the same time, I just run out of energy to just even go in and speak to anybody. So my overriding thought was just to sleep. So I wasn't alone. There was about, I don't know, 10 of us on the lawn, which now even, you know, you don't feel as stupid doing something like that when there's more people doing it. So safety in numbers. But yeah, a bit odd sleeping outside a hotel. But yeah.
I don't have any exciting stories. I stayed in a hotel every night. It's like, I like my sleep. I like a bed. I like washing my clothes and not getting like crotch rot from a dirty chamois. So I stayed in a hotel. And I guess that's more like it's, you know, everybody has to do it differently to do the distance. And that was my calculation. That was what I needed to do. It meant I took less stuff. I could go ride a little bit faster every day. And it kind of worked for me. Some of the hotels were a bit odd. I'm glad I didn't end up in the Love Hotel that everybody seemed to end, like quite a few TCR races. I ended up in Shkodra in Albania. If you look for it, you will see it. It's sort of heart-shaped beds and neon lighting. I kind of would have quite liked to. I think it would have been interesting. As weird as it got was a German, an Austrian hotel, which was still half being built. But yeah, no, I'm afraid no exciting stories.
I think a lot of my friends think that I just, when I go out and cycle, I sleep in bushes. To be fair, that's half the time very true. It becomes a knack, actually. I think with experience, it becomes a knack that you spot places that are good to sleep, and then you make bad choices. So recently I raced in Ireland, and then for some reason I thought a garage forecourt would be a good place to sleep. It wasn't.
Yeah, I think it is a weird one, because I find I do that even just out on normal rides. I'm like, oh, that would be a good place to come back and sleep. And you're like, why am I going to sleep in Essex? Like, I live in London. But so next question. Sorry, I'm losing my train of thought here. What was your favorite part of the race? Like, what road did you enjoy the most? Or like, what climb stood out in your mind the most? Just basically that moment when you're like, this is why I'm doing this.
Yeah, I think you ride on some amazing roads, and you have a lot of kind of, I'm not too good with heights, and I hate climbing, so I picked the right event. So yeah, I found myself riding a lot of time just looking at the road, so I couldn't see the amazingly steep drop just to my left. But having said that, I think I actually found a lot of the climbs, you know, you find a lot more motivation to just dig in and do it. So I actually found it a lot easier than doing the flat roads when it's really no views. It's very, very boring. And I think it's probably Checkpoint 2, which is up Mangart Saddle.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Which is the highest point in Slovenia. And the views at the top are well worth any of the scary climb up there. I got there just at sunset, which was like a really amazing moment to get there, and just to see a storm moving in, which gave me the motivation to get down very quickly. So that's probably the best climb, and then the best road was maybe Montenegro, which was somewhere I had no idea how beautiful it was going to be, and just, you know, you kind of just look around and it's like you're riding on a movie set and you kind of forget that it's just what you're doing now. You're riding through these stunning places. So yeah, Montenegro was, if you've not been there, is beautiful, well worth visiting just to sort of ride some of the roads there. Absolutely stunning.
I mean, like, if people ask me what was great about the TCR, I'd say the people and the scenery. So I like the road in to checkpoint 2 was amazing. But for me, I think it all comes together again in Montenegro. It's just basically from checkpoint 4 to the finish, the route was kind of obvious. Everybody basically took pretty much the same route. One guy went to Serbia, and I still don't know quite why he did that. I think to add a few more countries. But everybody was on the same road, and there's just this one road just after you cross the border into Montenegro, and it was basically going up a steep valley, like a crystal blue river at the bottom of the gorge, cut through tunnels on either side and bridges kind of spanning across it, and just like one of the most beautiful roads you've ever done. But because everybody was kind of on the same road, you were always around people. And kind of the people at the front of the race are incredibly serious and like, head down and I'm going to beat you. The people at the back are just like, I'm trying to get there, and chatting and supporting one another. So it's just like this moment, I'm in beautiful scenery, I'm riding with these really interesting people, and everybody's just really lovely. And it was just great. So yeah, Montenegro.
So I would also say the Bosnian checkpoint, but I did it slightly differently. Everyone says how beautiful it is, what beautiful views. It's where Sarajevo had its downhill, where it had its alpine events. I did it at 12 o'clock at night. It was pitch black. I was walking. It took 2.5 hours for me to walk my bike up there because it's such thick gravel. I couldn't ride my bike. I think I may have done 20 minutes out of that 3 hours. But it was beautiful. So it was just, it was clear skies. It was just the stars. I got to the top and there was a building that I couldn't see. And it just had, it was like a window with just a shaft of light clearly coming down. That's all I could see. And then I turned around and came down, which took about an hour, occasionally walking my bike. I think I still got the fastest female time because there was no one else around me. And then I got to go to a hotel and had one of my 3 showers of the whole 16 days. So, yeah, that was a beautiful time. And there were nice people around.
So I guess it's quite hard to remember over a year ago. It's kind of each road. But I remember we went from checkpoint 2 in Italy up to, I think it's Slovenia for checkpoint 3, and it was northeast, and there was this brutal headwind, and it was in the heat wave. I don't think it was as bad as this year. And I remember just wanting to, I just didn't think I was going to make it. And I think we spent 3 days going northeast with this checkpoint. And it was just, I think we were going about 5 miles an hour with like horrendous Slovenian drivers, just almost, oh, anyway. So I got there eventually and turned the corner, and we had this tailwind when I hit Romania, and it was just the nicest feeling ever. I think I had like 30 or 40 miles to the hotel, and was like cruising along at 30 miles an hour into a thunderstorm. I was just so happy. And again, Romania, because I was at the back, everyone was telling me how scary Romania was. And I was really, really scared of Eastern Europe, which is not okay. It's just like, you know, you have these views of places you've not been. So I was going into kind of Romania terrified because some people had been chased by dogs and wolves, and someone apparently had been shot at. Let's say this had all come through. So I was absolutely terrified, but just thought it was the most beautiful country ever. So I was really, really excited to have an amazing tailwind in a beautiful country.
I mean, I was quite lucky. When the race happens, I spend a week in Gerensbergen. Then I come back and I get to see hundreds of photographs that get taken by our fantastic photographers that are on the road. And this year looked really, really special. I really enjoyed seeing stuff from Poland because it broke a lot of people. It was really fucking steep. Just to echo from when I've ridden, if anyone has a chance to go to Montenegro, go to Montenegro. It's absolutely stunning. It's my favorite country. I always try to get it in every year.
So I think one of the things everybody kind of secretly wants to know about these things. No, not dogs. We all know this dog. injuries and the gross stuff that happens, the lack of hygiene, the, you know, just stuff goes wrong. We all know stuff goes wrong on these races, hygiene-wise. What's the worst thing that happened to you?
My butt. It wasn't pretty. By the end, I was wearing two pairs of bib shorts. It still hurt. I won't say any more.
Yeah, the two bib shorts was probably my idea as well, I think. It gets to the point where every time you get off the bike, you then have to kind of get back on. And the first maybe mile, as soon as you hit any bump, it's like you've started on raw ass again, basically. So there's a point where you don't want to get off because you know you're going to get that point where you have to get back on and start from the same horrible sensation. And then you ride into the point where you just get over it, to be honest with you. But I think the last couple of years, it's been brutally hot whilst you've been riding. So riding in the heat and obviously not always being able to shower, you can imagine you start to get pretty grotty. And I think it was just a lot of sleeping in fields and just waking up, and I'd been bitten in places I didn't even think insects could get to be honest with you. And then you've kind of got to deal with that as you go along. So it's, it's not always pleasant on the hygiene side of things. And I think a lot of injuries aren't always falling off your bike or, you know, cutting your finger. Sometimes injuries are just literally you're sore in some pretty... My hands now, so I work as a mechanic, so trying to deal with picking things up when I still can't feel the ends of my fingers. I think a lot of people get a similar thing where you basically damage nerves in your hand from just the constant vibration. And that's just got to the point now where I kind of obviously trying to pick up a bolt off the floor, but I can't feel a bolt. It's pretty difficult in my job. I'm hoping it gets better eventually, maybe. But yeah, that's probably the worst injury is my hands, I think.
It does. You got to get one of those like little squishy balls.
Squishy balls?
Yeah, squishy balls. You're fine.
Whatever helps. I'll do whatever.
I'm quite lucky I didn't really suffer from saddle sore. I wash my chamois every night without fail, no matter where I was. Like even in public toilets, I use tea tree soap and it really, really works. It's like got an antibacterial thing in it. There's one night actually I didn't, and I started to get saddle sore the next day. So I swore by whatever I was doing, whether I was bivvying or whatever, wash my. I had one pair of shorts and I just put them on wet in the morning. So that worked for me. I mean, everyone's different, but yeah, so I was okay. I had lots of niggles at the beginning with, just because I wasn't used to doing that and didn't do enough training. But I was lucky enough to ride myself into it. So I think I was really, really lucky. I remember like Sean Kelly on the Tour de France saying, he talks about like cab riding his way into the tour. The whole way through it, I was like, oh, I'll ride myself into this. And I did. The last day I felt so strong and I felt like such a climber. I was really sad it was over, but I was okay. But like, I had a little one of those balls which you like roll on, like for your knees and stuff, and just made sure I stretched every night.
Some I would add, I did transatlantic weight and I had horrendous saddle sore. Do not buy a pair of sample bibs and try and do 2,000 kilometres in them. So actually, I learned from that mistake and I bought normal shorts, and I didn't have any problems with that. But I fell off my bike 3 times. And that was the worst injury I had. I came off on the first night and I smashed my front arm. Like I had like macaroni cheese on my shin and on my arm for the first bit of time. And then 3 days later, I did it again and I took it all off. I just was an idiot riding on bits of pavement. And I think that was probably the worst injury. And then it injured a bit of my pride as well. But also my biggest fear was then, fuck, will my bike work? And then like, if I have to give up on the first night, wouldn't that be embarrassing? But then luckily,
the bike went round and, yeah, bloody mindedness kicked in. I was like, I'm just going to have to carry on going.
Yeah, on a transatlantic way this year, my bib shorts ripped. The chamois, yeah, no, this is, I'm not telling that story. It's a different one. Sorry. There's a bad story. If you want to find out about it, you can listen to the Transatlantic Way debrief, which is online somewhere. It's bad. But no, the chamois ripped in half, so my sit bones were directly on the saddle, and that was not good. I finished, yeah. Anyways, I think we should, like, from our side, end on an up. So if anyone wants to have, like, a positive thing for anyone.
I would say, finishing it, if you do something like this, remember to allow your some time to adapt back into real life. I hit the party train, and I have done for about a year. So I've been boozing quite a lot. I took so bloody long. My bike just kept breaking, and I was pretty I got there eventually. I finished, got back into Gatwick, like, Tuesday evening, and was straight back in work Wednesday at 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. Straight back on that. And I work in the cycling industry, so I was so lucky. Everyone was like, oh, you've just done it. Oh, it's amazing. I was just high on life and just tried to do everything a million miles an hour. And it's just taken me a long time to recover. I think I feel better about now. So I think if you do it, and I think everyone probably echoes this, just allow yourself time to not ride and just chill. But it's amazing.
Yeah, so I'd say same thing. I got to the finish line absolutely amazed I'd done it. Just missed the party that's arranged at the end by a few hours. And then panic set in that I didn't actually know how I was going to get home because I hadn't arranged any flights. I hadn't arranged a bike box to fly my bike home in. I had no spare clothes other than bib shorts and like a thermal vest. And that's how I travelled back through Gatwick, getting some seriously odd looks. And normally that thing would really embarrass me and, you know, I'd be mortally sort of wounded by people staring at me. But I'd say if anything, Transcon's taught me, you know, you end up doing some really weird stuff you'd never do in some really weird situations. And, you know, I've kind of got over that really quickly. And I flew back and I was like quite happy to sort of fly back with my Transcon hat on, in my bib shorts, just walking through quite proudly. And I'd say, yeah, I got back and I went from Gatwick Airport to Croydon. And then I had an amazing bike ride. I built my bike at Croydon train station and rode back to Tooting. And it's made me realise that actually that's the most dangerous part of the journey was the Croydon. I said it joking, but it seriously was. I think that was the worst part of my ride. Even people moan about how bad it was in Bosnia. Croydon to Tooting, worst ride ever. So it's made me realise riding's beautiful elsewhere. So travel more is one thing.
Just from a positivity point of view, I think people need to who experienced the race and who've ridden it, and it was for me when I did it a few years back, was that it really opens your eyes up to how amazing people are everywhere when they've got nothing and they're still inquisitive and they want to talk to you. And they want to help you, and you just have a lot of positive encounters with people that initially you find quite alarming, especially if you live in London and everyone's out to get you. You're in the middle of Bosnia and someone's like, oh, how much does your bike cost? And you think they want to steal it. They just want to know because, you know, and, oh, have you got somewhere to stay? Have you got food? Let me get a drink. You sit down, have this food. And it just opens you up to actually, we're all the same. We might not speak the same language. We might not be in the same country, but people just want to be nice, and sometimes it's nice to be nice. And when I left and came home, it opened my mind up to a lot of stuff. It was good.
I completely echo that thing about people. One of my memories is so about 70, 80 kilometers from the end, went to a pizza place. It was just like, I need the fuel to get to the finish. And he's just like, I'll have a pizza, please. And it's like, great. And then the guy's like, so what are you doing? Why the hell are you in the middle of Greece at like 11 in the evening on a bike? Where are you going? And it's, oh, you start telling your story. So he brings some chips as well. No cost. Oh, no, don't worry about the cost of the drinks. And it brings a bloody dessert pizza and I'm full. And it's just like, and I've like got this guilty thing that I've got to eat the goddamn pizza because I, otherwise I feel like I'm sort of being rude to him, but I can't eat anything more, but he's just like being really nice to me. So yeah, just like people were amazing. The other thing for me is like, if you ever do it, I set up a WhatsApp group of all of my friends, and it's just like, you know, send me messages, send me encouragement. And if you think I'm doing crazy stuff, like dangerous, tell me, try and tell me to stop. And I had this like really weird collection of my mum, a whole lot of people I was at university with, people I ride bikes with, work colleagues, and they got a bit out of hand. I think they managed 8,000 messages during the TCR, and they got a bit like sort of, they digressed a bit. So it's like, I'd be heading towards a town and they'd like digress. Oh, you're heading towards Brno. There's some interesting chair designers from Brno. Can you like pick one up while you're there or something? But it was like, it was brilliant because it was just like gave this like connection back to humanity and to people. And also that like, there's lots of people I know who actually get on with one another. And then the third thing I'm going to say, I'm raising money for charity, and I raised $8,000 for Cancer Research UK, which was brilliant. I'll put the link on my Instagram account if you want to donate. plug.
Yeah, I think that is one of the most amazing things about these kind of races. I think there's a vulnerability when you're traveling by bike. People don't see you as a threat. They see you sort of as just another person traveling through and as vulnerable, and they want to help you. I think on every big ride I've ever done, I've had so many people offer to help me and want to give me food and drinks and whatever. And it is a really nice thing, because I find when you come back into the city and back to real life, it does carry through. I find myself talking to random people all the time. They think I'm crazy, but like, it's quite a nice thing to just have that conversation or say hello or just, you know, speak to the person in line next to you that you see every day. And I think that's kind of the things that it does teach you, is that most people are good and it's okay to engage with each other, which I think we sort of sometimes forget in London a little bit. On that note, we're going to open it up to questions. I'm sure lots of you have questions and are tired of listening to me ramble.
Hi, friends. I'm afraid you can't hear the Q&A because we had technical difficulties, weirdly, the minute that we started that section. So that's where this ends. We ask that if you are able to please kindly support Anna Haslock's Just Giving page. I'm going to put a link below. She is raising money to go to Australia to be present at the inquest into the death of Mike Hall. Anna is the race director for the Transcontinental Race, having taken over the role when Mike died. You can read more about Mike Hall if you're not aware. Again, I'll put a link below. Thanks again for listening. Thanks again to all our guests and Laura Scott for hosting. And if you like what we do, don't forget to comment. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to rate. Don't forget to subscribe. And if you know somebody that likes cycling and podcasts, recommend our show. It means a lot. Until next time, bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.